Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Loray. Right now, we're going to take a look at that series in the Tampa Bay Times about the workers exposed to lead at a lead factory in East Tampa. The series is called Poisoned, and it was co-produced with the PBS program Frontline. They produced a video to go along with the series in the Tampa Bay Times, and here is just a short opening segment from that video.
Poisons are everywhere inside this Tampa factory, Florida's only lead smelter. Cadmium, arsenic, toxic gases, but lead is the most common.
Inside, you would think it's dirt, but it's not dirt. What I know now, it was lead.
About 300 people work at Gopher Resource. Workers take old car batteries and recycle them. They remove the lead and melt it down in furnaces that burn at 1,500 degrees. It's dangerous work.
All I hear is boom! And next thing I know, I'm hopping on one foot out the building.
Cole Brown worked at Gopher Resource for 6 years. He started on the factory floor and worked his way up to supervisor in the furnace department.
A glop of lead went straight down and it ate the socks that I had on, ate the pants leg, all of that. This is a third degree burn. I had to get a skin graft surgery.
Well, that's a worker at the Gopher Resource plant in Tampa, a lead recycling plant, speaking with one of the reporters at the Tampa Bay Times. We heard Corey Johnson narrate that piece, and we're going to talk about the series that is running in the Tampa Bay Times on their website right now called Poisoned, and one of the co-investigative reporters on the project is Rebecca Woolington, and she joins us now. Hey, Rebecca, how are you? Thanks for coming on the program.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. We really appreciate it.
So let's start with this Gopher plant is in East Tampa. It's kind of south of the fairgrounds in East Tampa, just a little bit west of 301 and south of I-4. Tell us what the plant does.
So the plant is primarily a lead acid battery recycling facility. So they take used car batteries. So when your battery goes bad and you take it back to like an AutoZone, they take those used batteries and they break them open, extract the lead from the battery, and then melt it down, purify it to create new blocks of metal that they then sell.
And they process a lot of batteries every day, right?
They do about they can do up to 50,000 a day.
Okay, that's a lot of batteries. It's a lot of lead. Where does the lead go that they process? Who buys the lead?
Their clients have included the U.S. military, battery manufacturers, makers of ammunition. Most of the lead in the United States that is produced is used to produce new car batteries.
Okay. Well, it's a pretty important industry. You got to have it. We got so many cars and batteries out there. So this plant, we're not able to see the video on radio, but when Frontline in the Tampa Bay Times was talking to this worker, Cole Brown, in the background, we're seeing video, plumes and plumes of dust that workers are working in. And that dust is all lead dust, right?
It's contaminated dust, so that the dust contains lead. I can't tell you the exact percentage of lead in that dust, but it is lead contaminated dust. Yes.
And this worker described being burned by the lead. How common did you find were injuries like burn injuries at the Gopher plant?
We found several workers who had filed workers' compensation claims over burns. And then just in speaking with workers at the plant, so many of them, when we were talking to them, would pull up their shirt sleeves and show us their burns. They call them tattoos. And they described them as being incredibly common.
Our guest is Rebecca Woolington. She is one of the co-writers on the investigative piece, Poisoned. It's about a lead recycling factory in East Tampa. The Tampa Bay Times reporters spent 18 months examining thousands of pages of regulatory reports and company documents, including data tracking the amount of lead in the air and in workers' blood. They interviewed more than 80 current and former workers, 20 of whom shared their medical records. And among their findings, that Gopher exposed workers for years to levels of lead in the air that were hundreds of times higher than the federal limit. So it's a pretty impressive piece of reporting, Rebecca. So you talked with lots of workers. How could workers be exposed to levels of lead in the air that were hundreds of times higher than the federal limit? And I take it, well, tell us, did the federal regulators look at this plant very closely?
So what we found is that regulators haven't been to the plant in 5 years. Their last inspection was in 2016. By regulators, I'm talking about regulators with the Federal Occupational Safety and Health Administration. They are the ones who have primary jurisdiction over workplace safety at the plant. And their last visit and inspection was in 2016, and that was related to a complaint about sulfur dioxide exposure. The last time that regulators inspected the plant related to lead exposure and actually took samples of lead exposure that the workers faced was in 2014.
It's
been a while.
Did you find problems existed between 2016 or 2014 and now? Did you find examples of where workers had serious lead exposure since then?
We did, yeah. We found that the air lead levels in the furnace department continued, in the furnace department particularly, I should say, continued to be sometimes hundreds of times above the federal limit. And we also found that workers were exposed beyond the capability of their respirators. So the respirators are made to handle a particular, like a maximum limit of an air lead concentration, and the air lead concentration in the plant was surpassing that protection limit.
Did you ask the OSHA people, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration people, why they haven't more recently inspected the plant?
We did, yeah. We asked them a lot of questions, and they would not agree to an interview, but they did answer some of our questions, written questions that we sent to them. And essentially what they said was they have not received a referral to go inspect the plant, they have essentially a lottery system to where they're currently under what's called a national lead emphasis program, and that's basically an order from Washington to pay special attention to the lead industry because it's known to be dangerous and it's known as a significant cause of occupational illness. And so essentially they're supposed to pay special attention to lead businesses. But what happens is they place all of the lead handling businesses on a list and then randomize that list and essentially create a lottery system to where they're picking businesses at random to inspect. And so they essentially told us that Gopher has not come up in that lottery in the last 5-6 years.
Wow, it sounds like Gopher won the lottery there. Tell me, in previous inspections, when OSHA did go in, did the company have any warning that it was about to be inspected by federal regulators?
Sure. So what we found was we found some emails. We obtained, just to give you a little sense of the records we were looking at, we obtained the inspection records going back to 2011 and then their most recent inspection from 2016. And in the 2011-2012 inspection, we found in the inspection file that there were some emails between the inspector and the safety officer setting up a time for a walk around at the plant. And then they also set up in advance their visits for the air monitoring. So the company knew when they were going to come and conduct the air monitoring.
Did the workers say that they were told to clean up the plant before those OSHA inspections?
Workers did tell us that before OSHA inspections, they were told to clean up.
Well, we're talking with Rebecca Woolington, who is part of the team that is covering the problem at a lead recycling plant in East Tampa. The series in the Tampa Bay Times is called Poisoned, and it is on their website right now. So, Rebecca, what are the problems? If you're exposed to lead, if you're breathing in dust that contains lead in high levels of lead, and if you're exposed to it on a daily basis, what are the potential health problems from it?
Yeah, so a lot of medical research has established an association between lead exposure and high blood pressure, cardiovascular disease, kidney disease or injury, a whole host of effects, neurological problems, cognitive problems. Lead is a very what's described as a non-specific poison, so it doesn't target a specific part of your body. How, you know, if you smoke cigarettes, cigarettes are associated with lung cancer. Lead is associated with damage throughout your body. So it's very nonspecific and can target many organs.
Hmm. You talked with 80 current and former workers. Of those workers that you talked with, how many of them had the kinds of problems that might be associated with lead exposure?
Well, we talked to more than 80 workers, and we got medical records for 20 workers, and which we reviewed, and then we from the subset of 20 workers whose medical records we reviewed, 16 of them we had company medical exams for. So these workers typically go annually to have an exam with an occupational doctor that is contracted through the company. And so, in looking at those medical exams, we were able to track them a little bit better over time to see how biological markers in the workers were changing over time. And we found in looking at those that 7 workers had some signs of possible kidney damage. And we talked to experts, medical experts, occupational doctors about these kinds of measures and about some of the things that we were seeing in the medical records as well, and had some of those experts review the records as well.
Did you find workers that had spent maybe a decade in the plant or a little bit longer and became so sick, even though they're relatively young, that they had to quit work?
We found workers who... we found 14 workers who had suffered either a heart attack, stroke, or a cardiac arrest event, and all were below the age of 60. One of those workers suffered a stroke at work before his 50th birthday, and he is now unable to work.
Hmm. If you were to compare the lead poisoning rate in Hillsborough County to other big counties around the state of Florida, like Orange County or Miami-Dade or Broward County, how would our level of lead poisoning compare here in Hillsborough County to big counties around the state?
Hillsborough County has the highest number of lead poisoning cases in the state, and that's part of what led my colleagues, Corey Johnson and Eli Murray, to start looking at lead exposure in the Tampa area and broader Hillsborough County.
Set the scene for us. The plant is in East Tampa. It's kind of in an industrial area. What's near the plant? What kind of, is it purely industrial? Tell us what the plant is near.
Sure, yeah. So it's right next to a CSX rail yard. And then it's also right in the neighborhood too. So it's a half mile from an elementary school. It's near, you know, several auto repair shops, but it's right it's right next to some houses in a residential community.
Now, there are plumes coming out of that plant. There's some sort of emission coming out of the plant. I don't know what's in it, but it looks like white smoke coming out of the plant. Do we know whether or not that white smoke that comes out of the plant contains any lead?
So the company does report lead emissions annually to the EPA. So they do have some lead emissions that come out of their stack that are reported to the EPA. But I can't tell you how much specifically is coming out.
So Rebecca, the company employs a doctor, and doctors, the doctor that you talk about in your series was the person who everybody went to when they had a problem, a health problem at the plant. Could you describe what this doctor's role is in your reporting?
Sure, yeah. So federal rules require that the company provides the employees with regular medical evaluations. There's a whole set of rules, the lead standard and some other OSHA standards that require these regular medical checkups. And so the company has chosen to contract with a local doctor and clinic to provide those services. And essentially his job is to, make sure that workers can safely do their jobs.
And when the workers went to the doctor, did the doctor ever identify that there was a problem with high lead levels in their bloodstream?
He did not, no.
Yeah. Well, we're talking about the series Poisoned in the Tampa Bay Times. It's an investigative piece about a lead recycling plant in East Tampa. And what the Times found was that at the plant, 8 out of 10 workers from 2014 to 2018 had enough lead in their blood to put them at risk of increased blood pressure, kidney dysfunction, and cardiovascular disease. In the past 5 years, at least 14 current and former workers have had heart attacks or strokes, some after working in the most contaminated areas of the plant. And this is WMNF in Tampa. If you've got a question for our guest, Rebecca Woolington, who's one of the reporters on the story, you can email it into the studio. The address is dj@wmnf.org. Rebecca, was there a ventilation system in the plant that would take some of the lead out of the air?
Yes, but what we found is that there were many problems with it, just starting when the new plant was constructed. So for a little bit of background, Gopher bought this plant in 2006. So it's been in the community for a long time, but Gopher bought it in 2006 and decided to essentially rebuild it. And from the get-go, though, consultants found that they were having problems with the ventilation system and that was leading to higher exposures inside the plant.
What about the kids? I mean, did the workers who work at this plant, or perhaps I should start with, tell us about the 300 or so workers at this plant. Who are they, just generally speaking, if you could talk about them?
Sure, yeah. So we found that a lot of the workers at the plant, we found that many of the workers are Black. There are many who are immigrants. Some, came to the plant right out of high school. We talked to one worker whose father worked there. We talked to several who had a criminal conviction in the past, and they were trying to restart their lives. They were excited to have a job that paid them, around $20 an hour, and also came with overtime opportunities and bonus opportunities. Many told us that they felt that this was better money than they thought they could ever make. And that was, one of the reasons why they wanted to work there.
So it's better than getting minimum wage if they're getting $20 an hour. It's the kind of job you want to hang on to if you're trying to become part of the middle class. So talk about the children. Did Did the people that worked at this plant bring home any of the lead on their clothes, and were children exposed at home?
Yeah, so we found that dust from the plant was the suspected cause of lead exposure in at least 16 children of 13 workers at the plant, and that some of those workers had carried the dust home, you know, in their cars, the soles of their shoes. One baby girl tested so high for lead that her pediatrician had recommended that she be monitored weekly.
Hmm. Is there a union at the plant?
There is a newer union, but my understanding is that it's still kind of getting underway.
All right. So for most of the time of your reporting, when you're looking back to, for instance, 2014 and 2018, there was no union at the plant at that point.
2014, 2018, yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. Did these workers know that lead was dangerous, and did they do anything to try to mitigate the amount of lead in their bloodstreams?
You know, a lot of them said that they did take measures to try to lower the amount of lead in their bloodstream, but in a lot of the interviews that we did, they were predominantly concerned with getting bonuses. So the company assigned bonuses based on the amount of lead in a worker's body, and the lower your lead level, the more money you were able to receive. And so many of the workers who we spoke to, they weren't concerned about you know, what this poison was doing to their body. They were concerned about whether or not they could make more money.
And so they were trying to reduce the amount of lead in order to make these bonuses. What methods did they use to try to reduce the amount of lead in their blood?
Yeah, so many workers described taking a medication. They refer to it as EDTA. I don't know if everybody is specifically taking EDTA, but essentially EDTA or a similar type medication is a chelating medication. So basically it strips your blood of metals. And the problem with that is that it can strip your blood of both good and bad metals. So good, healthy metals like iron and bad metals like lead. So they described doing that. Some workers described trying to donate blood to get rid of, to lower their lead levels. And then at least one worker described actually undergoing an intravenous chelation therapy to lower his blood lead level.
I wonder if any of those worked. Were they successful in lowering their blood level?
So the intravenous chelation is effective. The medication, the workers say that it is effective as well. They said that they would notice that their blood levels would drop. The donating blood, the workers believed it made a difference in our interviews. Experts said that they don't think it would reduce it by much.
I wonder if the people who are the recipients of the donated blood then get elevated levels of lead in the blood that's donated.
That was a concern that medical experts raised, that blood banks and the FDA does not require that they check for heavy metals in blood donation.
Mm. I read in your story that they tried eating leafy vegetables, they tried cilantro, they tried vitamins and fruits and probiotics and prune and pickle juices, all as a way to try to get the lead out that they were exposed to by going to work every day. Bob in Largo sent in this question. He says, is there wastewater from this plant, and who's checking the lead in the wastewater?
No, that's a good question. I would say that we, at this point, we're still continuing our reporting, so I unfortunately can't answer that, but thank you for the question.
Yeah. So it's so unusual. This is one of the few lead recycling plants in the entire U.S. You report that there are about 10 around the country. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
And this company also operates one in Minnesota. The Gopher Company operates a lead recycling plant in Minnesota. How did you look at whether or not the safety and working conditions were the same in Tampa as they are in Minnesota?
We did compare. We were able, early on in our reporting, we were able to get some OSHA inspections from the plant in Minnesota. OSHA in Minnesota is a state-run program, so we were able to get that inspection very quickly, and it had some of the air data from the plant in that inspection, which actually made us curious about what the air lead levels were here in Tampa. But we were able to compare the levels of lead in the air from that were included in that inspection to some of the records that the workers obtained here. And we found that the air lead levels in Tampa were far, far higher than those in at the Egan plant during a 2013-2014 time period.
Hmm. I think I remember reading in the story on Sunday, the story that came out on Sunday, that one of the workers was looking at the floor at the plant in Minnesota and said you could eat off that floor. Am I remembering that quote right?
You are, yeah. So some Tampa employees went to the plant in Egan, Minnesota, for leadership training. And when they arrived there, they were very surprised at the different conditions.
So this plant is in East Tampa, and it's not far from the Tampa Bypass Canal, which is an important waterway for us here in Tampa. But also, it's near neighborhoods like Grant Park, Oak Park, Florence Villa, Dixie Farms, Useta Farms. And you're asking people that live in those neighborhoods if they suffer any of these problems, heart ailments, kidney failure, infertility, hypertension, muscle weakness, behavioral problems, reduced attention span, cognitive disabilities, debilitating headaches. Because you want to see if the lead is spread, right? Is that the intent of that?
Yeah, we're hoping to hear from community members to hear about their experience for further reporting. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, and how can they get in touch with the Times if they have some of these conditions?
Well, they can get in touch with us, or we did set up an email address, which I don't have it right in front of me, so I apologize. I believe it's poison.tampabaytimes.com.
Okay. All right. Rebecca, before we go, so what did the company say? I mean, was the company available for comment, and what did they tell you about the high lead levels that you found in these workers?
Yeah, so the company didn't agree to an interview with us, but they did release two statements, one last year and then a lengthier memo response that was 2.5 pages earlier this year. And essentially they said that safety is important to them. You know, they said that they made improvements since they bought the plant in 2006. And then they also talked about how the blood levels among their workers are lower than what the OSHA standard, are lower than the maximum set by OSHA.
Rebecca, what kind of response have you gotten since the story first appeared on the website, on the Tampa Bay Times website?
We've gotten a lot of response. We've had some community members reach out and share some of their stories. We've gotten some response from the occupational medicine and safety community, response from the journalism community. Lots of interest in the story, as well as where our future reporting is headed as well.
Because this report took your team 18 months to do.
It did, yeah.
That's a lot of work. All right.
Yeah.
Rebecca Woolington from the Tampa Bay Times, thanks a lot. The series is called Poisoned. I think they can just go to the Tampa Bay Times website or search for Tampa Bay Times and Poisoned and find the series, right? And Rebecca, is there anything else you'd like to point out about your investigative report?
Gosh, I don't think though. Thank you so much for having me. It was great to talk with you.
Well, it's so important to have investigative reporters who have the time to spend 18 months on a serious project that may affect all of our health. So, Rebecca, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, good to talk to you.
Yeah, bye-bye. Take care.
All right, bye-bye. Bye-bye. Well, that was Rebecca Woolington, who's part of a team of reporters who is reporting on possible problems at the Gopher Resources plant in Tampa, which recycles lead batteries. And team has found that workers there have been exposed to levels of lead in the air that were hundreds of times higher than the federal limit. That's just one of many findings in the series. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Our email address, dj@wmnf.org. I'm going to go to the phones right now, but we've got some listener comments that were left over from previous programs, so we're going to hear those in just a moment. Let's go to Blanny, who's calling from Tampa. Hi, Blanny, you're on MNF.
Hi, Rob. Great show. And this issue is dear to my heart. A little over 40 years ago, I worked in a steel mill, and, very similar situation. Instead of lead, we were breathing in sinter dust and lime. And when OSHA was scheduled to come in, and again, it was scheduled, and we'd have days where we would be cleaning it up. They would turn off the furnace. Similar happened in the coke plant and in the blast furnaces. We basically would turn things off, clean things up, and then OSHA would come in. And I was hoping things would be a little bit different after 40 years, and it sounds like it's exactly the same. And on top of that, even with OSHA, there was no there were no exams so at all in, 5 years? And, that's kind of an example of what happens when there's deregulation. And that just...
Yeah, we always hear how burdensome federal regulators are, or even state regulators. But here's a case where, according to the reporting in the Tampa Bay Times, the federal OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration regulators, have not inspected the factory for lead contamination since 2014. Okay. So that doesn't sound too... onerous if the company has gotten away without an inspection for 7 years.
Yeah, and then even giving the, we used to laugh about it because, we got, the company would get notice, and it was like night and day. I mean, it went from where you couldn't see more than, 2 or 3 feet in front of you to completely clean. And, it's true in other inspections, like the Joint Commission, which is in charge of hospitals. I am now, I'm retired, but I am now in medicine, a nurse practitioner, and work in many hospitals. And we would get multiple days of notice of when the Joint Commission would come in, and we clean everything up and change everything. And these announcements should be spontaneous. But that's not really why I wanted to call. I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about the doctor. Dr. Bunker, I think, is his name. And here's another issue that I think that legislation needs to deal with. The role of the, when you have the doctor or the occupational medicine being hired by the company, then, the interest is getting their workers back to work and hiding any problems. Because if they don't do that, they'll lose the contract. So,
did you have an experience? You're a nurse practitioner. Did you have an experience where that happened to you?
Oh, absolutely. The last few years, I left the emergency department and was working in urgent care. And in the emergency department, if somebody came in with a work-related problem, usually they wouldn't come in unless it was off hours or it was serious, a very serious injury. We gave our opinion and whatever, but they always had to go back to the occupational medicine that the company, had contracted with. So when I went to urgent care, we were the company that many businesses contracted with. And
I had actually been reprimanded several times because I thought whatever the injury was bad enough that the patient needed to have a few days off or get sent to a specialist. And I had even my boss call me up and tell me I needed to change my note and I needed to get this patient back. And this one case that really hurt my heart is this person was a foreman in a construction company, and he had something fall on his leg and caused a pretty significant injury. And he medically was not in the greatest of shape. He had some circulatory issues. He was obese and he had diabetes. And I was very worried about that he was getting an infection and that he could lose his leg. And so I insisted that he see a specialist and that he be home for a couple of days. And my boss, who was the head of this urgent care, basically told me I had to change that because we might lose the contract. I had other instances where the same thing was said to me that, you know, you need to send this patient back. They can't have any time off. You know, we don't want to lose this contract. They're very strict there.
So let me get this straight. So you're a nurse practitioner. You're working for a private medical company, and you're uh-huh. seeing patients. And mm-hmm. that private medical company is also contracted to see the patients from certain businesses. Well, your right. bosses are telling you, downplay the seriousness of this person's injury or illness because we may lose the contract with the company and
exactly
we may
right.
lose thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars. So there's a conflict between your practicing medicine and what the company wants you to do.
Absolutely. And I'm sure this Dr. Boniker his concern was not for these poor workers that are, you know, that are suffering so and not even telling them that their lead levels, lead were elevated, not paying attention to a person whose blood pressure was well over 200 systolic, not being concerned and sending them back to work, to me is, I think it's criminal. And it certainly doesn't go along with our motto of to do no harm.
Yeah. All right. Blanny, thanks a lot. Thanks for your call.
Okay. You're welcome. Oh, one more thing, Rob. I'm worried about the community. I went over there and I saw that factory this weekend. And I would love to know if I would recommend that people in that community that live in that area to get lead levels. And that's my recommendation.
All right, Blanny, thanks a lot. And communities that Blanny's talking about are in East Tampa, Grant Park, Oak Park, Florence Villa, Dixie Farms, and Useta Gardens in eastern Tampa and east part of Hillsborough County, too. I think it goes beyond the city limits, perhaps. Well, our phone number is 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. I'll just tell you a quick story. When I was younger, I worked with coal miners trying to help them get their black lung benefits. And I worked in southwestern Ohio, rather. And they had all moved up from West Virginia and Kentucky and Tennessee and Virginia. And to a man, it was all men back then in the mid-1970s, to a man, if you were 40 or older and you had worked in the coal mines 10 or 15 years, you couldn't climb the 21 steps to get to my office, which was at the Miami Valley, the Dayton Lung Association. And every coal miner I ever met who had worked at least 10 or 15 years had breathing problems. They had all had breathing problems. Well, they had all gone to the doctor who worked for the coal companies, and the doctors all said, well, it's your smoking or it's your lifestyle that makes you short of breath. And we were trying to fight the coal companies to try to get black lung benefits, which is a benefit that Congress passed to give coal miners who suffer from pneumoconiosis, the fibrosis disease associated with exposure to coal dust, to get a monthly pension check after they worked. And there wasn't a worker I met who was 45 or 50 years old that didn't have trouble breathing, and their Their partners also talked about how they sat up in bed at night. They couldn't lay down, couldn't have their head on the mattress. They had to lay up with four or five pillows. And in the morning, they would cough up this black gunk from their lungs. But they went back to work. They went back to work because the coal mines were union jobs back then. They're no longer union jobs. And they were making a lot of money. And when they came up to the Dayton area, they had good pensions. So if they chose to retire, they had something, but they were all sick, every one of them. 813-239-9663 is our phone number. Jeff writes, is there any way to make such a facility, the lead facility, healthy and safe? Is this company not taking the necessary health and safety precautions to cut costs? If the on-site doctor is saying that the workers are healthy, but the other sources are reporting something different, then that doctor should be investigated, writes Jeff. And then C. Parker writes, in today's Trumpian heartless world, what is the estimated taxpayer and or insurer medical cost resulting from Gopher's practices? That's a good question. I think some of these people are on public assistance now because they're no longer able to work. So C. Parker, thank you for that. And Stephen writes this, appreciate the question on fact-checking. What I found so far is that following up with the verifiable facts on the variety of vector-borne diseases is a lot like delving into the Hanford Nuclear Reservation on the Columbia River or finding out just what the lab at Fort Meade does. All right, Steve, not sure what that's in response to, but thank you. Thank you for your email. Andy writes in regarding lead. He says, I remember Eve said that testing blood for lead is ineffective because lead leaches into bones. This was her take on testing kids in Flint. And Andy, actually, thank you for that point, because that point does come up in the Times series, that the lead quickly leaves the blood and moves into the bones where it causes great damage. And it's hard to get it out of the bones, if not impossible. So the Times does cover that. David writes, this is Minnesota a right-to-work state like Florida? No, I don't think Minnesota is a right-to-work state. David, thank you for that question. Let's go to Robert in Lakeland. Hey, Robert, you're on M&F. Thanks for calling. Robert?
Hi, Rob. Thank you for hearing me. I am a taxpayer, and I work in a clean business, which I'm grateful for. However, the government is so notorious for waste, and I wouldn't mind my taxpayer money being spent helping that company clean up. OSHA has become like an enemy to companies, and it should be a friend. That company, during the interview I read, pays a good wage. People want to work there because they can make a living. And there's so much good. And we need lead. We need lead for our future electric cars, future car batteries. Let's spend taxpayer money cleaning that up or giving some direct corporate tax break in exchange for it. I want my money spent that way. I want my tax dollars spent on the environment. This country and its land is our wealth and our blessing. And we need to treat that with the greatest level of care. I just want to say that. I would be happy that my tax dollars are spent helping that company be clean and stay in business.
Okay, well, you're absolutely right. I mean, with more and more cars being hybrid and electric power, some of those are lead batteries, and you're right. And it also raises the question, can we have a cleaner battery technology, too? Because it sounds like lead inherently is a very dangerous thing to deal with. And then the other thing is it does go into ammunition, and it goes to the military, too. So that raises a bunch of questions. But, Robert, thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you, Rob.
All right, good to hear from you. And David writes, I was very pleased to see the Times publish the Poison series. It's good to see that investigative journalism is still alive. The news media is not the enemy of the people, writes David. Well, we got a few phone calls I haven't played yet. These are comments that have come in over the last couple of days, some about the COVID checks that for some people haven't arrived. So let's listen to some listener comments from the past few days, and then we'll go back to the phones. And when we do, our phone number is 813-239-9663. Here's about three or four listener comments that have come in over the past few days.
This whole thing about the new bill on how we're supposed to protest, just in a way to avenge all of the protesters that are getting locked up at the riot. So now we can't have any kind of protest because of them. But I think they're just making a point that, okay, they did such a bad job, we can't have anything. And also, there's something very wrong. We had to do a petition, maybe, where everybody can sign it, saying we're not happy with the way you want us to vote. To vote our way. We are the people. We're the ones that are paying for everybody to have their job in the first place.
I read something yesterday that might explain the stimulus check delay. If a Social Security recipient did not file a tax return because they are below the minimum income required, that is the issue. Apparently, they are not on the same automated list as Social Security recipients who did file returns. With the previous stimulus checks, that obstacle was somehow eliminated, but former President Trump did not like it and somehow was able to put that obstacle back in place in December. The problem has now been discovered, and Social Security is now communicating with IRS, with the proper list, etc. I can't explain why this was allowed to happen, but that's the story, and checks apparently will be coming in the weeks ahead.
Yeah, Rob, I received a letter from the IRS that I thought might be helpful to someone who was still seeking to receive their economic impact payment in the amount of $600. That was the second payment. They said if I had not received it, I could either go to the irs.gov/EIP website, and there's a link that says, where's my economic impact payment? But more importantly, they gave an 800 number that I thought would be useful for somebody who did not have access to the internet. And that number is 800-919-9835. 800-919-9835.
Hello, this is Kevin in Bradenton wanting to leave a message about today's radioactivity. And basically, I want to talk about the illegal protest bill, the bill that will make it illegal if someone throws a rock while 1,000 people aren't doing anything wrong. And at the same time, the other bill, the one that's going to do the best that they can to suppress the vote. It does seem like to me that they are very serious, the Republicans, and the only thing that they're serious about is those two things. And right now that does seem to be the tip of the hypocritical iceberg that they have been riding on. Let's just remember, at least according to what Fareed Zakaria said on his last show, he said that George Washington once said, beware of political parties because they could lead to riots and insurrection.
Well, those are a few listener comments that have come in over the last 48 hours here on the comment line. And if you want to comment about anything you've heard her so far, you can call us up at 813-239-9663. Barbara Fling is our phone producer today. She'll take your call and then send it over to me, 813-239-9663. I'm going to mention some other news stories that we might consider talking about. The Florida Sun Sentinel in South Florida is reporting this, that Florida's COVID-19 cases are rising again as air traffic reaches numbers not seen in more than a year. That's sparking concerns that Florida's reputation as a wide-open vacation playground could help fuel a fourth surge of COVID-19 infections. The White House and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention called for the vigilance yesterday, describing a feeling of impending doom with an alarming new uptick in cases nationwide and the increased spring break travel. Meanwhile, Governor Ron DeSantis continued on his course of fully reopening the state's tourism sector and downplayed the federal government's concerns. DeSantis said during a news conference yesterday, when you start talking about doom, what you are saying is that vaccines must not work, says the governor. Well, Delta Airlines and Coca-Cola, two of Georgia's largest corporations, are facing consumer boycott threats after Georgia's governor, Brian Kemp, signed new voting restrictions into law last week. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution is reporting that social media posts carrying the hashtags Boycott Delta and Boycott Coca-Cola proliferated on Twitter over the last few days as critics of the Republican-backed legislation accused the two Atlanta-based companies of not having done enough to stop its passage. On the weekend, Boycott Delta was one of the top trending hashtags on Twitter. Other Georgia companies targeted included Home Depot and Aflac. Leaders of the AME 6th Episcopal District in Atlanta said last week that they would call for a statewide boycott of Coke for not doing enough to halt new voting restrictions. So that's some of what's going on. Let's take some calls. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. And our email address is dj@wmnf.org. Well, Florida's Governor Ron DeSantis is forbidding local governments and businesses from requiring so-called vaccine passports to show proof that customers have been inoculated against the coronavirus. The Republican governor said yesterday he'll be issuing an executive order. He made the announcement yesterday when eligibility for receiving COVID-19 vaccinations in Florida, the age was lowered to 40. Well, a bill that would require parents to opt in to sexual health education for their kids is on a legislative committee agenda today. Jessica Bakeman, who is with the South Florida Public Radio Station, tells us a Miami-Dade Republican is sponsoring the controversial bill, and a Miami Democrat chairs the committee where it'll get its first hearing. Let's listen on the bill that would have parents opt in to let their kids learn about sexual education.
Parents would have to sign off on any teaching about, quote, reproductive health or sexually transmitted diseases under the new legislation. State law already allows parents to opt out of sex ed, but under Senate Bill 410, they'd have to opt in. If parents don't return signed forms, their kids won't learn about those topics. The Florida chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics sent out an email blast asking people to write their representatives opposing the bill. Efforts to regulate what kids learn about sex in school are common in Republican-led legislatures like Florida's. This bill is sponsored by Republican State Senator Ana Maria Rodriguez of Doral. But the bill will come up first in the Criminal Justice Committee, chaired by Miami Democrat and former prosecutor Jason Pizzo. I'm Jessica Bakeman in Miami.
And that bill comes up for a hearing today. Let's go to John in Plant City. Hey, John, you're on M&F. What would you like to say?
Hey, Ron. What program is that? On WMNF,
Now, John, we can't hear you. Yeah, I don't know if you can.
How about that?
Closer to your phone. Yeah, try that.
Okay, I'm real sorry, but anyhow, you know, one thing about lead and lead acid batteries, I don't think there's, at least this is what I've heard, that there's, you know, it's a very good process, but you see how capitalism kind of works on that process for profit and at the expense of the workers. And you got to think about lithium and all this stuff that's coming into the country and how, you know, like it's kind of the same problem that they're going to have with recycling and, you know, capitalism. And it's kind of funny. Right now, the only thing that's really bringing any money is aluminum and tin and lead. But I guess this is the best we can do. But that's my comment.
All right, John, thank you. Thank you for your comment. Let's go to Ted in Ellenton. Hey, Ted, Okay, we're going to try to get Ted on. Yeah, looks like we can't get him on. Well, if you want to comment about today's show, please call us at 813-238-8001 or record your comment on extension 115, and I'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Stay tuned for your hero, Mark Bureau. He's coming up next right here on WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. And thanks to Barbara Fling. She's been our phone producer today. The news from NPR is coming up in just about 45 seconds. This is WMNF Tampa.
It's not set in stone. It's only a song. It's only a poem that could change in the long run. It's only a song. It's what I said then, just to make it rhyme. Could have been on my mind at the time. Putting paper to pen, it's only a song. It's only a song. Could be back to front, just to get it to work. It's only a song. Get at the jump, get at the swing, so I can sing it